This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Good morning, everybody.
Take that, Shannon Sharp.
Good morning, everybody. How are you? Welcome
that,
in.
That oh, yeah, is Shannon Sharp, is it not?
That was Shannon Sharp, yeah.
We might need to think about rotating that out, depending on how everything turns out. I think we're in the clear for now, but we'll see.
Shannon Sharp with Johnny Manziel is who he was interviewing when he said that. That was, in retrospect now, possibly, allegedly, that could be a fun interview to go back and watch with Shannon Sharp. You know, just Johnny and Shannon sitting there on the same stage with each other, sitting there talking on the old Shay Shay podcast. Yeah.
Listen, Sean, I have zero regrets about wanting Golden State in this series. Zero.
Oh, about
you hear me?
Oh, about
zero.
About wanting to play them. Yeah. That's
yes.
Well, I mean, look, and for those who are just getting up, there may be some of you, seeing as it was a three-hour basketball game. That's the problem with having a series that involves Draymond Green, and the Rockets are not without blame in this either because of the style of play. When you get chippy playoffs, which everybody seems to want, I love the chippiness. You're going to get three-hour basketball games because they're reviewing flagrant fouls and they're reviewing technical fouls and they're trying to separate people. And the chippiness is a whole lot of fun. It's a lot more fun when you're actually winning basketball games. 109-106, the final score last night. The Rockets are now down 3-1. The season has been pushed to the brink. They'll be back here at Toyota Center on Wednesday night. An early tip, 6:30, to try to salvage the season here. But last night, Seth, overall, it was a fun game. It was a close game. It was a tense game. The part where I'll give the Rockets credit is that they bounced back from horrific starts in both the first and the third quarter, where I will assign blame, and I'll assign plenty of blame, and you will as well here in just a second, is try not to get off to a start where you fall behind 16-4 on the road in the first quarter, and try not to cough up a 7-point lead at halftime by giving up an 18-1 run in the first 4 minutes and change of the third quarter. Those two stretches, the first 4 minutes and 18 seconds of the game, the first 4 minutes and 37 seconds coming out of the half, the Rockets gave up a collective 34-5 run in those two periods of basketball. This game was lost, before we assign individual blame, this game was lost in the box score in those two stretches of basketball and the Rockets' inability to shoot free throws. 19 of 31 from the free throw line. Can't win games, close games on the road.
Well, I can't win close games on the road, but at the very least, you were in position to get right there at the very end. If Şengün didn't chuck the ball up like his older brother was coming after him to grab the game controller from him.
Yeah.
It was Şengün... Şengün was more aggressive in this game than he was in the previous game. And I'm stuck in this position, Sean. I feel like you're a little bit more fed up with Şengün than I am. I'm looking at him and Steven Adams are the only guys with positive plus minuses in the series so far. And Şengün produced for you last night. But he's still a notch below a 57-year-old Draymond Green when it comes to just actually really showing up. And last night, Draymond Green, Şengün looked good, but Draymond Green, by and large, owned him. Yeah. If Draymond Green hadn't gotten himself in foul trouble, then Shangoon's not going to have the production that he did. He was miserable with Draymond Green on the floor.
I've got the numbers for you right here. And I am more fed up with Şengün. Some of the plus-minus stuff, for example, last night, yes, Şengün and Adams were the only positive players on the floor last night. Steven Adams was a plus 16 in 26 minutes. Şengün was a plus 4 in 42 minutes. Some of the pluses, some of the plus that Şengün is getting is because he's on the floor the same time as Steven Adams. Steven Adams has been the better big man in this series for the Rockets. He's been the more effective at both ends of the floor because he's protecting the rim. He's getting rebounds. Şengün had maybe the worst 30-point game that I've seen anybody have last night in my time of, at least with this Rockets team, in my time of watching the Rockets. That was the most timid 30-point game I've seen. And you're right. He did most of his damage when Draymond was off of the floor with foul trouble. Draymond left the floor with 8 minutes to go in the third quarter, 8 minutes and change. He came back in with about 8 minutes to go in the game. So Draymond was out for the equivalent of about a quarter worth of basketball. In that time, Şengün had 17 of his 31 points in 12 minutes. The other 36 minutes is when he got the other 14 points. During that stretch, he was 6 for 10 from the field. During the stretch with Draymond in the game, when he had Draymond on him, he was 6 for 18. He was 12 for 28 on the game. There were times in this game when Alperen Şengün had Pajemski like low post, like defending him in the, like 6'4", defending him in the low post, and he's passing out of it. He's got Pajemski like facing him towards the basket, where if he just backs him down, you're going to get a good shot. And he's not doing it. And then when he is getting shots, he's timid. He's short-arming. All the things I said going into this game with Şengün, where he's just looked weak in this series. And that's where I thought, it's ironic to say that the leading scorer for the Rockets last night lost this game for them. But because he was such a big part of the game plan, and because he was so aggressive, to use your word, at least aggressive in terms of the amount of shots he was taking, he kind of lost this game for them, my opinion.
But this is the problem, though. It's that I can't focus on Şengün when Jalen Green has 5 turnovers and 8 points.
There's
in the
blame
game.
To be spread around for
Jalen
sure.
Jalen Green,
yes.
When I ask, like, okay, which nerve is most raw? Jalen Green, over the past 7 games, he scored more than 9 points once in the last 7 games, and that was his 38-pointer. He's not even inconsistent.
Yeah.
He's showing up once every 7 games. Yeah. And you can't play him. It's very, very frustrating.
No doubt. Well, some of those, just to give credit, like Jalen, some of those 3 games at the end of the year, he wasn't playing full minutes. You know, like they were.
He wasn't playing full minutes, but he also wasn't producing. He was shooting way less than 50%. He was like 2 for 8 in one of them.
No, he was.
I know it wasn't full minutes.
And the games didn't mean anything. Yeah.
Leave it to just the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. Just focus on this series.
Score more than 10 points more than once this playoff.
Bingo.
Series.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You're 100% right. No, Jalen deserves blame. Jalen deserves blame as well. It's one of those things, like, you're right. Like, I was surprised and encouraged that Ime Udoka actually had Jalen off the floor for the last several minutes of that game.
Yeah.
Because he had been kind of kind of had favored nation status in these other games that he's scoring 9 points and 8 points. The desperation is starting to set in. And I am very, very interested to see if Ime Udoka just sticks with the same old for this game coming up. Because I'll tell you what right now, Fred VanVleet ain't shooting 8 for 12 from 3 again in game 5.
Well, no, he's not shooting for 8 for 12. And I think because the other part that I battle with is, all right, well, they were down. It was a 1-possession game at the very end of the game.
Yeah.
And yet, but you see the difference between the Warriors are on that final play. You know, Draymond Green gets in the lane on the inbounds. Then they try to run a screen with VanVleet. They don't switch it. They don't get what they want. And then Şengün just pulls up short because Draymond scares him. Because Draymond, according to, now listen, Jalen Green will claim that all Draymond Green can do is talk.
Yeah.
And by and large, that's partly true compared to the previous version of Draymond Green.
Offensively, for sure, yeah.
He just shuts. I mean, he turned. Şengün was not a good player when he was out there.
No. Well, and there was a serenity to the game when he was not out there. You know what I mean? Like, there is this element to Draymond. And this is the first time we've really seen it in this series, because this is the first game where he's had to sit out an extended stretch with foul trouble, because nobody calls fouls on Draymond, it seems like. Certainly not a second technical on Draymond. Is that they're what, like, the Rockets were? You know, the Rockets were, when Draymond was in before he got his 5th foul, was the stretch where the Warriors were making an 18-1 run to come out of the shoot at the half. The Rockets getting back in this game did coincide with Draymond leaving the game, and there is kind of a calmness and a serenity where you can kind of get what you want a little bit more without Draymond out there, A, because he is a good defensive player, and B, because there's just none of the agitation, none of the extra stuff that the Rockets are getting sucked into by Draymond is happening while he's out there. So yeah, like that was a good. It sounds weird to say because in the box score, Draymond made his first two shots in the first 45 seconds of the game, and then didn't make a basket the rest of the game. But his impact was absolutely felt both when he was in the game and for those 12 minutes that he was out of the game. No question about that.
Yeah, but I have zero regrets about wanting Golden State in the playoffs, including the fact that the series is not over. That's right. I said it. Series isn't over. And second, if they do go down in flames, you know exactly where the Rockets are right now, and there will be no loss of urgency in trying to fix some of the things that ail this team, like having a shooter here or there to actually be able to consistently score points when you need to versus good defense.
Yeah, I mean, this, like, the specter of Kevin Durant hovers over this series right now in a big, big way. Like, that, this was the first game in the series that came down to the last couple possessions of the game in the last minute. The other series have all, you know, the Golden State's won their two games by 10 points and 9 points. There's nothing happening in the last minute other than free throws and meaningless baskets. And then the Rockets won their game by 15, and they were up by 20 for most of that game. This was really the first game where you acutely felt, Seth, the lack of a go-to scorer in crunch time. This is the first game that's had crunch time in this series. And to your point, what do you wind up with? Because you can't run anything, and because you don't have a guy who's a go-to scorer, you wind up with Alper and Şengün chucking up a contested 14-foot hook shot at the end of the game. You know,
the other part that was just bothering me all game long is that, you know, Kevin Harlan can lift up almost any color commentator, but Reggie Miller was at his Reggie Miller.
That's what I saw. I saw that. I was watching the local feed. I was watching Craig and Ryan and Vanessa. This is what I heard, is that he couldn't pronounce Şengün's name. He's pronouncing it Şengün is what he was saying.
Shane,
that's the one thing I saw.
Frankly, that's a little
media.
Bit better. Yeah. I kind of like Şengün.
Şengün.
I would change my name to Şengün.
First name Shane,
surname
last name Goon. Yeah.
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 You scare some people for sure.
He didn't with all the multiple fouls and the flagrants and the technicals in this game, Reggie just wasn't seeing what other human beings would see.
I heard Reggie was butchering that part.
It was it was really it was a lot. It was kind of like when Phil Simms used to be a color commentator.
Yeah.
And be like, are we watching the exact same thing here? I don't understand what you're talking about. Phil Slims and or Reggie Miller.
Yeah, that's exactly. Şengün and bad calls of foul. Texts are rolling in on this early. 713-572-4610. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Jalen Green is starting to look like a younger version of James Harden in the playoffs. Whatever version of Jalen Green is, that's an insult to James Harden.
That's a deep insult to James Harden.
Yeah.
James Harden had his issues in closeout games.
Right.
And he had his turnovers in the fourth quarter that were frustrating and weird. But he produced.
Yeah.
He produced.
Yeah.
He scored. He routinely scored more than 10 points in playoff games.
Jalen's had one good game and then three horrific games. James's MO was to have four good games and then one really bad game in the closeout game of the series they would eventually lose in. So, no. He's not looking like the youngest version of James Harden was in Oklahoma City and was the sixth man on an NBA Finals team. So
He looks like a lesser version. He's doing the same thing, just as a lesser version of James Harden.
Yeah.
Not a younger version of James Harden. Not sixth man of the year James Harden.
No.
He's looking more like closeout game James Harden.
At least
but he does it every
shots.
Game.
Yeah, and Jalen's solution to trying to stop a Golden State 9-0 run is to just dribble, like spaz out and dribble into traffic and just spin his body around and turn the ball over and then yell at the refs. So, a lot of people done with Jalen Green. Multiple texts from different people. I'm done with Jalen Green. All right, we'll talk more about this Rockets game for sure. Astros win last night. Let's talk about some good stuff. Astros win last night. We're going to circle back to the Texans as well. We've had kind of the chance for the smoke to clear on the draft. How are we still feeling about this draft class? We'll get to all that today. We got a petty cast at 8:00. Going to be fun. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast. All right, a couple items, and we'll dig into the good news from last night. The Astros win 8-5. Rockets lose 109-106. They trail the Warriors 3-1. Going to be interesting to see the energy in the arena tomorrow night when they come back here to try to salvage the series and salvage their season and salvage us from weeks and weeks of Kevin Durant talk. To clean up some things we talked about in the previous segment, we had a text in and say, Jalen Green is, it looks like shades of a young James Harden the way Jalen Green is playing, to which Seth and I both immediately said, That's an insult to James Harden. We're not here to like put the shield on and protect James Harden unconditionally.
Yeah, it just,
give us the numbers, Seth.
Jalen Green has scored in the double digits once so far in the playoffs.
Four games.
Out of four games. In 85 playoff games with the Rockets, James Harden never scored in the single digits.
Correct.
He did score in the single digits on his way to the double digits. So he had 85 games.
He go from 0 to 10, yes.
In the lows, there was a 12 somewhere. There was a 17. Yeah. It was like James Harden, for all of his flaws and faults and the reasons with, let's not rewrite history here.
Right.
Like, to compare Jalen Green to James Harden in any capacity, especially now in the playoffs. You know who was clutch in the playoffs? Compared to Jalen Green?
Oh, James Harden.
James Harden.
Yeah, he made a lot of big shots, man. Yeah, like, come on. James Harden was first team All-NBA about the time he set foot in Houston, and he was out of the shadows of Durant and Westbrook. Like, stop it already with that comparison.
This will be the one saving grace is if, let's say hypothetically, the Rockets lose this next game, but Jalen Green goes off.
Yeah.
Hey, he's good in a closeout game. There you go. But he was clutch in a closeout game.
36 points, 2 turnovers. Take that, Harden. What happened? Well, they lost in 5. Yeah. And by the way, one quick news item. I know we got headlines coming up, but worth mentioning here. George Kittle becomes the highest paid tight end in football. It was Trey McBride for about 3 weeks with Arizona. He had 4 years, $76 million. Kittle had been agitating for a new deal. He gets 4 years, $76.4 million, proving that the 49ers can continue to pay some of these guys, even with the cap issues that are pending with the Brock Purdy extension.
I hope that I hope that Luke Lachey is paying attention.
Yes.
There you go.
Hey, young
tight end out of Iowa.
Yeah, man. Day three tight end out of Iowa, like Kittle.
I hope Luke Lachey says something like that in his first press conference.
Yes.
Hey, I'm just trying to get that Kittle money.
Trying to get that bag, that Kittle bag.
Yeah, well, did he mention, I didn't listen to Luke Lachey's press conference or phone call afterwards. I wonder if, at some point when he's first here in Houston, we'll have to ask him about George Kittle and
All these Iowa tight ends. Yeah, I mean, that's Iowa's, Hockenson and Laporta. Like, if you're going to take a flyer on a tight end in the 7th round, Iowa's a good place to go do it, I would say. They're good at what they do. Astros 8-5 last night over the Tigers. The things we liked about this: one, the Tigers have the best record in the American League. I've not been paying a ton of attention to the standings, Seth, just because I've been like, as long as the Astros have not really kind of gone on that little bit of run that gets them a little bit of daylight.
You've been driving in the right lane. You're in the right lane, and you got it on the auto cruise, and you're like, I got other stuff to go on. I'm trying to read my texts here, okay?
I'll worry
about passing at some point.
That's right.
We get a few other things in order.
I'm just putting my head down and going to work, man, is all I'm doing. So, but the Tigers, still, even after the loss last night, have the best record in the American League, so we like that. I like that they got punched in the face early in this game. Renell Blanco gave up a couple of home runs. I think this is who Renell Blanco is going to be, Seth, a 5-inning, 3-run guy. That's what he's been thus far this season. So if Renell Blanco happens to be pitching on a night where the bats are a little bit warm, they won the last outing Renell Blanco had. They scored a bunch of runs for him in that one as well. Then, if he's going to keep you in the game, you got to go score some runs. I like that they got punched in the face early here, and Christian Walker gets you a 2-run homer. Jose Altuve nearly hits the train tracks with a home run. And then you pile on a few runs, just stringing together a bunch of hits late in the game, and you go on to win 8-5. The bats were solid. It was kind of like they had that game late last week where everybody had a hit in the game. Everybody but Chaz had a hit in this game. Everybody was doing a little something to move the pinwheel around here.
There were a couple things in that game that were nice. One was Jeremy Peña hitting leadoff. I like it. I like it a lot. As well as everything Jeremy Peña has been doing this year.
Yep.
And Altuve had that bunt, which was a beautifully laid down bunt initially.
First
called
at bat,
out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then it was turned over. But the Cam Smith on the base pass, and the Astros are really putting an emphasis on aggressive base running. And Dubon pops one up to short center field. Cam Smith just hit the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
Hit the Jets. Almost caught Yiner in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a good read on the ball. And if it were Altuve would have hit the Jets too, but it would have been an uninformed hitting of the Jets.
Yeah,
I feel like Cam Smith, with all of his experience in the outfield now, has a real good feel on track and all. But for a rookie to be aggressive like that, that was nice to see.
Altuve might have had his best defensive play as an Astro in left field, in a play where actually where Baez actually, you know, it was a double off the wall that Baez was actually safe for. But the way Altuve played it off the wall barehanded and spun and threw all in one motion and threw, it wasn't a dime, but it was for Altuve and for what his reputed arm strength is. It was a really good throw to second base. He almost got Baez at second base. Like, Altuve, again, he didn't get him out, but, like, we're just this early in this experiment, we're just looking for signs that Altuve looks like a big league left fielder. He made a really nice catch right after that as well. I thought that was a really encouraging sign right there.
And I think that if you look at some of the blips early on, it was stuff that it's, you know, I shy away from saying, hey, that's a simple fix.
Yeah.
Because sometimes simple fixes end careers. Guys can't make a simple fix and it ends somebody's career, in golf especially. So I think some of them, though, him transitioning the ball from the glove to his hand, that was a little bit of a blip early on. Some of the harder elements of maybe picking up that position at his advanced age, I think he's done really well with, is getting a read on the ball. And then his ability to play off the caroms off the left field wall, especially at home, he's had a few nice instances of that. Mm-hmm. They're setting up properly and waiting for the ball to come down to him after it goes off the left field scoreboard. And that's been really encouraging.
Yeah.
So far, the thing is, he's declined athletically, but it's not like he's decrepit.
No.
You know, he's just a slower version of what he used to be, and it was hurting him at second base. It's not going to be an issue in left field, especially at home.
He figured out the solution in the glove-to-hand transfer. Just don't use your glove. Just barehanded.
You should go out there barehanded.
Just barehanded. That's the solution. Then you don't have to transfer anything. Boy, we got a lot of texts rolling in on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Draymond should have been kicked out of the game. Since when is a flagrant never been a tech? Am I that old now?
At that point he had four personal fouls, a technical and a flagrant, and Draymond plays on.
That's
play. I mean, we knew this coming into it. They try like hell not to eject Draymond Green.
It's wild, man. I've never seen anything like it in sports, where there's a guy. There's one thing to operate with, like, a different mode of defending people or getting away with certain things within the play. It's another thing for the officials to tolerate, like, just literal disrespect and just
That gets anybody else a technical, going up and yelling at the official, stuff like that.
Yes, that's the thing. It's like the stuff that gets tolerated, and there's certainly plenty of stuff that gets tolerated by Draymond, like, inside the lines, but he's a very good defensive player, and he's a championship player on a team that's been a dynasty team. These are the things that happen with officiating in sports, especially basketball. Those teams tend to get more breaks, even if the league waves their hands and says, no, they don't. It's the stuff that is just blatant, like, demeaning and disrespectful to the refs that they put up with. It's wild to me.
He gets the leniency typically afforded only to really hot young women.
Yes.
And Draymond is very much the opposite.
Hot young woman.
He is not a hot young woman at all.
Man. No.
You know, you'll put up with a lot with a kind of a head case of a woman for at least 6 months in a relationship.
She's hot.
You know, it's decades of the opposite of a hot young woman getting the benefit of the doubt.
It's wild.
And we can't stand for this. This is America, damn it.
Yep. It's wild. The Rockets text message: the Rockets don't make a lot of high IQ plays. They don't. I don't even know if it's a basketball IQ thing. They don't have an offense. Like, their offense, they're half the time Fred VanVleet, at least early in the game, finally he was kind of taking ownership of the basketball, but they're early in the game. I don't know why they ever let Jalen Green engineer the offense, but they do. They have a real bad habit as a team of A, bleeding down the shot clock for no reason, especially when Fred's not handling the basketball, and B, just dribbling into traffic and picking up their dribble. And they spend 5 or 6 minutes just hemming and hawing, trying to get the ball to an open guy to reset things, and they wind up with bad shots. If Ime Udoka were an NFL head coach, he would be highly criticized as a guy who's like a defense-only guy. You know, like, their offense looks ratchet as hell all the time. And they've got talented basketball players. The problem is they don't have any snipers. They don't have any real shooters. And that gunks things up for them. And that's going to be something they need to address.
Well, they'll have stretches where they play with flow and ball movement and everything else. But it ends up, ends up feeling like you're at a 13-year-old's piano recital. We're like, oh, wow, oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Just a, oh, that, he's really nailing Old Town Road. Like, oh.
For 30 seconds.
This sucks.
Yeah.
Got to get out of here.
Not all, but not the.
Let me check the Astros score.
Exactly.
All
right. Exactly. Get on my phone. So, yeah, that's the thing. I don't know that it's a bat. Like, I don't know that it's an IQ issue. I think it's more of a, I think it's this collection of talent. There's just, there's limitations on what this team can do offensively.
They can't shoot. They can't shoot. Yeah. They flat out can't shoot. Yeah. I get it. I've gotten to the point where I get angry when they hit a three. Because when, okay, hey, Fred VanVleet has a great, great night shooting from deep. And the entire time, I'm like, well, yeah, but, okay, great, yeah. I mean, this will sustain you through seven games, sure. Yeah. Sure, old Mr. 25%er there.
Dude,
and that's from the field on a good night in these playoffs.
Did you see his pull-up three last night?
I got angry.
That was pretty dope. Went in, man. Yeah, it was pretty sweet.
I know.
Yeah. Much of the NBA is hard to watch with current announcers now. Someone saying that Mark Jackson and JVG, that they miss Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy. Reggie Miller, Doris Burke, yuck. I've been watching the game on the local feed, so I have not been keeping in tune with, other than through social media and people irate at Reggie Miller, including you, Seth. You watched the TNT feed last night. I guess Reggie Miller was pretty bad.
Reggie Miller was just botching his description of what was going on in some of these foul situations. It was really weird.
Was the presence of Kevin Harlan enough for you to enjoy it at least, or was Reggie's ineffectiveness drowning out Kevin Harlan for you?
It was damaging my relationship with Kevin Harlan.
Okay, I don't like
Reggie
that.
Miller was a third wheel on the date. I felt like he was a drunk chaperone on a date I was trying to have with Kevin Harlan.
Yeah.
No, I didn't enjoy it at all. Let me tell you one thing about Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of tangents, as you know. And yet, there were too many tangents within the broadcast at times with those guys.
Yeah.
There would be critical stuff going on, and I felt like I was watching the Manning cast.
Yeah.
Where sometimes they're having a conversation with a guest, and there's a really critical moment in the game, and you're like, all right, guys, could you get Kevin Love to watch the TV screen a little bit for a moment?
That's why I don't watch the Manning cast. I literally don't watch the Manning cast.
Yeah.
At least with Van Gundy, like 60% of the time, the tangent was about Houston sports.
It'd
be about the Texans or the Astros.
I like Van Gundy when he's not in a three-man three-man team, mm-hmm. because he could kind of sneak in these little asides and everything. But when you put him on a three-man team and he and Mark Jackson get along great, it ends up just being too much like you're listening to Payne and Pendergast while you're watching a basketball game.
Yes, there you go. The Rockets' offense is the University of Houston's offense. There's some similarities. I actually tweeted this last night. And I'm being dead serious. The Rockets need to go on the Kelvin Sampson 150 made free throws a day plan in this offseason.
Right. Well, and I think the bigger difference, though, too, is that the Rockets are focused on defense and yet aren't a great defensive team.
Yeah.
And the Cougs are a great defensive team. The Rockets are a scrappy team that plays good defense but gets a lot of offensive rebounds. Their best defense in some respects is just the extra possessions they get from offensive rebounds.
Mm-hmm.
So just like I think it's an insult to James Harden to say that Jalen Green is a younger version of James Harden. Likewise, it's a bit of an insult to the Cougs to say that this Rockets defense is like a Cougs defense.
Well, they're talking about the offense. They said Rockets offense
is the Cougs offense.
Yeah.
Well, okay, the Cougs can get away with that offense because they have a really, really genuinely good
defense.
They're
playing Kansas State, and they're playing, you know, like,
they don't have to score 100 points to win a championship.
No, they don't. Reed Sheppard was supposed to be our sniper, right? And we used a high draft pick on him. That's a text message. Yeah, I'm still bullish on Reed Sheppard. Ime Udoka is not all of a sudden going to start using Reed Sheppard for 15 minutes in this series. Or maybe he does. I don't know. Three-point shooting was not the main issue last night. Foul shooting was the issue last night. And I think Jalen Green's inability to get anything going and Shangun's inability to get anything going with Draymond Green on the floor. Those are the big issues. And coming out cold to start each half. That's it. Period.
Reed Sheppard has the odd distinction right now of having upside-down field goal percentage and three-point percentage. So this season he shot 33.8% from deep. I got that reversed up. Never mind.
Okay.
Carry on. Barely any better with his field goal percentage at 35.1.
Well, it's all he does is shoot threes.
Yeah,
I'm surprised they're not identical. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Let's get to the let's get to headlines. We'll get to the Texans. We'll circle back to the Texans at the top of the hour. What are the experts saying about the Texans draft? What's their GPA? What's their grade? We'll get to that top of the hour. We'll get to headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, let's start with the Rockets. They lose last night to the Golden State Warriors, 109-106, the final score. This is a game where the Rockets got off to horrific starts, both at the beginning of the game and the beginning of the second half. They trailed 16-4 right out of the chute, just a sea of turnovers and bad shots. They were able to kind of get their legs under them, and they actually led by 7 at the half. And then they come out of the third quarter and they give up an 18-1 run to start the second half. Again, it wound up a close game at the end. The Rockets had a chance to take the lead with under 15 seconds to go. Alperen Şengün, who scored 31 in the game, but it was not an efficient 31. He was 12 of 28 from the field. Misses a 14-footer, and the Warriors get the rebound, and that was it after that. Jimmy Butler, I thought, we have not touched enough on that, Seth. We've been focused heavily on the Rockets side of things. Jimmy Butler you could tell he was not himself. Like, especially, I mean, he had 4 points forever in this game, and then in the second half really took over. And by the end of the game, he's limping around on one leg out there because of his bruised glute. I wonder if he's going to play on Wednesday, given as badly as he was limping around at the end of that game.
Those are, the deep bruises. A lot of times it feels like somebody's hitting you with a baseball bat when you first start out, and then you get into it and you loosen up and you can go, but it's got its limits. So I would guess he's going to try again. Of course, I don't know if they think this way or not. They might think, okay, look, we got a 2-game lead and we're going to need him for the next series. Let's just take care of business without him and give him those rest. You're right. That's a good question.
Yeah.
I think if it was a closeout game, he'd go 100%. If it was a game seven, elimination game. He would do it 100%, but there's probably a pretty good chance they rest him.
Frustrating game last night. A lot of people weighing in on the text page. You know, we had the comp, somebody saying that Jalen Green's playing like a young James Harden. No, he's not. I wish he was playing like a young James Harden.
That would be way worse than a young James Harden.
That would be a young James Harden would be a massive improvement for where Jalen Green is right now.
Is 85 games that James Harden played in the playoffs for the Rockets and never once scored in the single digits.
Yeah.
Whereas Jalen Green is doing it 75% of the time.
He's got 3 in his first 4 playoff games. That might be the overriding thing for me last night, Seth. At one point in the game, when the Rockets were playing very well, when they were making, you know, kind of second quarter, they were good in the second quarter and good in the fourth quarter of this game. And I think it was at one point during the second quarter, I'm sitting here going, man, I'm trying to think of, like, who needs to be on the floor for this team right now? Who's playing in a way where they've earned their way? Like, they shouldn't be. I know you got to rest guys at certain points in the game. But I'm going, man, they're the 3 guys I feel like need to be on the floor for the Rockets at that particular juncture of the game were Dylan Brooks, Jabari Smith, and Steven Adams. And I'm like, none of those 3 guys are 3 of your best. Your 3 best players on this team are Jalen Green, Alperen Şengün, and Amen Thompson. And I'll credit Amen Thompson. He got better as that game went on. He was very good in the second half of that basketball game. He seems to have figured some things out offensively. But it's like the stars are not out for the Rockets in this series.
Şengün was good. Şengün scored and did most of his actual damage when Draymond Green was off the floor.
Yeah.
And when Draymond Green was on the floor, he was a completely different player. Mm-hmm. It was as simple as that in a lot of regards.
Yep, yep. He scored 17 points in the 12 minutes that Draymond sat out with 5 fouls. He scored 14 in the other 30 minutes that he played in the game, Şengün. Played 42 minutes last night.
Pre-game, Udoka was encouraging him to play more aggressive, be more aggressive. And it felt like they mismanaged this young fighter's career. They want him to be more aggressive, but you got to feed him nothing but backups for a while.
Tomato cans is what they call that.
Yeah.
So the Rockets lose last night. They're back at it on Wednesday. They'll try to get this thing back to 3-2, but they're going to have to do... You know, this is one of those things you have to make history now. You know, not a lot of teams come back from down 3-1, and the Warriors in control right now. Meanwhile, last night over at...
Got him. Astros win it 8-5. Josh Hader strikes out Javi Baez to put a finish to this one, and the Astros win the first game against the team with the best record in the American League as they win it by 3 tonight.
8-5, the final score. This was good to see. The Astros fell behind 3-0 in this game. Rinel Blanco gave up a couple of home runs to put the Rockets behind the eight, Astros behind the eight ball a little bit. But a Christian Walker two-run home run, and then Jose Altuve.
That ball driven high and deep to left field. Altuve hits the community leaderboard sign, basically on the train tracks. Train number 27 has just left Union Station. Astros lead 4-3.
4-3, and they wouldn't give up that lead. They'd go on to win 8-5 last night.
It's well-spent advertising money by the community leaders, folks, whatever it is they do, because Christian Walker hit it as well.
He did. So, at least for last night, it was well-spent. Thus far this season, not so much. Home runs been kind of a lack.
They signed Paredes specifically to give the community leaders a little bit more bang for their buck.
Yeah, I think it'll eventually be a good investment, but last night it certainly was. And it was good to see the Astros pile on some runs late in this game to give a little bit of daylight between them. And the Tigers, who have, as Todd Callis mentioned in the first cut we played there, best record in the American League right now. Joe Espada said, good to add on some runs last night.
Yeah, I like that. I thought we ran the bases really well. Daniel Diaz hustling there. Good, you know, the little flair by Dubon and Ken Smith scoring from second base. I thought that was a really good read. All around, good game. Actually kind of felt like a little playoff game out there. It was exciting baseball. It was good.
Yeah, it was good.
I mean, remember that listener from Detroit that was angry with me last year?
Yes.
When the Astros were playing the Tigers in the playoffs?
I do.
Remember I told him that I hope he died in traffic, and he got offended because he's sensitive?
Yeah,
has he been back? He listened to us for about 3 weeks after that.
Did he?
He was just constantly pestering us. Yeah,
I haven't seen it. Well, because they won that series, so he would.
Well, but it was within the series, though, too. He was pestering. Oh, yeah, that's why he stuck around. Right?
Yeah, he could taunt. He could, you know, crotch chop on us and stuff.
It was
like
fun.
That.
I just kept waiting for the day he didn't show. Maybe he died. Maybe that was when he stopped.
Maybe
he finally,
your wish came
finally
true.
Got hit in traffic.
Yeah, maybe. So wishes do come true, Seth. Yeah, maybe
he,
so.
He sent an email to multiple people at Odyssey. He sent multiple emails to multiple people at Odyssey.
It's not like you were out there slashing his tires or something. So. That's funny. NFL news. The Browns officially DGAF. Kids, don't ask what that means. They sign just a mere 24 hours or 48 hours after drafting Shedeur Sanders and injecting oodles of drama into their quarterback room. They're bringing in Deontay Johnson, Seth. They signed Deontay. They signed Deontay Johnson to a 1-year
deal.
He's
one of my favorite Texans in history.
Is Cleveland going to be the most fun team to follow outside of Houston for us in the preseason and training camp and whatnot?
I think so. I think it's. I mean, it's the quarterbacks drive a lot of attention.
Yeah,
and they've got tons of them. More quarterbacks than the modern NFL allows.
They've got tons of them.
I didn't even know it was legal to have this many quarterbacks on your roster, wow, including Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
they've got five quarterbacks on the roster right now that are actually either draft picks this year or name guys in the NFL.
Yeah,
you know, a different, like, Joe Flacco is what he is. Deshaun Watson, nobody knows what he is. And then three other guys who are either draft picks or presumed starters in Kenny Pickett.
We got to go through that room and like at some point and go, okay, what's going through each of these guys' minds right now as they're watching, looking at these other four guys that are in the room. We'll do that later.
I think Shedeur Sanders has I would put Shedeur Sanders as probably ahead of Dylan Gabriel on the depth chart. At the beginning, if I had to handicap this,
yeah,
I think, and then it just becomes, I don't know, like, Shedeur still is, despite all of the other hoopla around it, he's still the better prospect
than Gabriel
from a football standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, you know, even though you can argue about where he should have been just purely football or what have you,
yeah,
as long as the Browns have a long history of handling bad situations like this really well. I don't know.
We'll see. The NFL draft crushes it in the ratings. Second most watched day one since the COVID draft, which took place at Casa de Goodell. Remember that? The draft took place in Roger Goodell's basement during the COVID year. 13.6 million viewers across all the platforms. So ESPN, NFL Network, all the digital platforms, up 11% year over year. Day two, up 40% year over year. That was the day where we're all sitting around waiting for Shedeur to get drafted.
Shedeur made the NFL Network a lot of money on that day, I believe. You know, that was Shedeur driven.
And Deion will definitely brag about it, which I'm not sure. He'll credit Shedeur for the big ratings for it. Deion definitely will. which will be accurate. I just don't know if that's the best tactic.
What was the high number on any of those?
The high number on any of
the high. What was the highest number on the broadcast?
I just have the average. They average. I don't know what the peak was.
That's what I mean. What was the highest average on the days, amongst the days?
13.6 for the first day.
And then
7.3 for the second day, and then they don't have the numbers yet on day three.
Like a good number for an NBA Finals game is like $11 million or 11 million viewers.
Yeah.
So like that's for as much as a lot of people want to ask, like, why are they making such a big deal out of this? Because it draws eyeballs.
It crushes. And it was going head to head with NBA playoff games on Thursday and Friday. Not Rocket games, but playoff games with other series. All right, those are your headlines. We've got some other stuff we can get to from headlines a little bit later on in the show. Let's circle over to the Texans and their draft class in just a bit. There is a good point being brought up about the Rockets last night. There was one chess move that Steve Kerr made that I thought Ime Udoka might have flinched a little bit. So we'll get to that. We'll get to the Texans and how are the experts grading the Texans draft class. We got a nice long segment coming up here. Get comfy. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.